Hey, everybody, this is Sam, and what we have here is a special podcast-only episode. This was originally supposed to air 2 weeks ago after our interview with David Niosi in a fourth online-only segment, but it ran long, and it had just as much content in it as we cover in an episode, and an extended debate between me and Ron John, where I thought I was being devil's advocate pro forma, but I kind of get into it, so... I'll leave that to you to determine whether or not, you know, what side I was on that one. And I've decided not to edit this one quite down so much. Usually I'm trying to edit for air, but there's some fun bits in here, and I feel like if I cut it out, I would kind of cut down on the fun. So I'm leaving it as it stands for the most part. Anyway, here you are, Season 20, Episode X1, podcast only. Check yourself. Welcome back to the 10th inning, the 19th hole.
The chaser.
The chaser, the 50th wicket, or whatever the hell happens in badminton.
Stoppage time. I demand it.
Stoppage time. Stoppage
school.
Time. Yeah. Right. Ask an atheist. 844-SKEPTIC. 844-753-7842. But I'm really using the wrong theme song. I really am. I should be using a different theme song. Let me play it for you. Hello, Becky.
Hello, Sam.
I think you might have an apology.
I do. At this time, I would like to take a few moments to apologize to all of our listeners and every resident and citizen of the Czech Republic. I am sorry.
Okay.
Can I just say, that is beautiful music.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
That's so much better than ours.
The Czechs actually are very talented composers. Dvořák amongst them.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And writers, of course, Franz Kafka.
Yeah.
Spent a great deal of time writing in Prague.
Yeah.
So I may have been just slightly overly patronizing last week to our Czech brethren, who are also skeptics.
Yeah.
And are awesome. Thank you.
I don't know if you actually got any hate messages or messages, chiding messages.
I didn't personally.
Sure as hell did. Yeah. Why are you so mean to Becky?
Today's show is brought to you by the Tacoma Society of We Love Czech Republic a Lot, Really Honest.
Indeed. So we got some news here. Wow. Okay. Do I really have to go into the? I'm going to go to a different one because I'm not going to do the Bangladeshi person out of that.
No. We'll fade into that one.
Okay.
Jeez. We'll just roll into it.
Norway's parliament repealed the country's long-standing blasphemy law in response to the Charlie Hebdo attacks. The government originally voted to repeal the law in 2009, but hadn't implemented the change because of problems with the new penal code. A bipartisan effort to finalize the change began in February after the attacks on the office of Charlie Hebdo. The proposal, written by members of both the Conservative Party and the Progress Party, said that the law underpins a perception that religious expressions and symbols are entitled to a special protection, and that it was time to stand for freedom of speech. So I didn't entirely avoid dead people.
This is actually a fairly beautiful thing.
I think so, too. Yes.
I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot that can be said about this other than just to read it again. It's a simple statement that there's no reason to magically protect religious subjects or religious thoughts.
Right.
That's just, I mean, you know, it's about as clean as it gets.
Yeah.
Unless you mean religious subjects, meaning the people, the subjects of the religious leaders, if we're looking in the,
well,
sort of like feudal.
Okay. I imagine that if you're living in a country where members of a religion are called subjects, freedom of speech really isn't in your top 10.
I guess not.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to say, you know, what's even more impressive about this entire thing is there are governments out there where two opposing parties can come together and write legislation to make greater freedom for the citizens of said country. I didn't even know that could happen.
That's a fair point. And yes, we should all apologize for just blowing past that novelty.
Yeah.
Of two governing parties getting together and saying, yeah, right on. Okay, let's do this.
Wait. I read it. Doesn't mean I read it. Holy cats! Conservative Party and Progress Party.
Yeah.
Working together.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Also, they name their parties appropriately. Like, it says what it is on the label.
Yeah. Yeah. Like anytime you went to another country and there's a Labor Party, you have no idea what's going on. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what you mean.
Well, forget that Democratic Socialist Party could mean anything.
Oh, ah, did I just hear a waft of Godwin in the room?
I guess so. Perhaps just a little one.
Well, which one's the Democratic Republicans? Is that Republicans or Democrats?
I don't know of which you speak, Dave.
Once upon a time, there was a party called the Democratic Republicans. I believe it is the Democrats.
Is the Democrats now? Yeah. Okay.
Because, I mean, the Democratic Republicans and the Republicans. That's a little bit people's front of Judea.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I was dying when you made that reference the other day, by the way.
Yeah, our parties are really named around what the other people aren't. It's like, we're Democratic. You aren't.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're Republican, and you aren't.
You know, they used to be a little bit more honest, because, you know, like, the Know Nothing Party, an accurately named party, if you look at their platform. Jeez.
Bull Moose Party.
The Bull Moose. I no idea.
They really like mammals.
Yeah. That's a Rocky and Bullwinkle reference, as far as I can tell.
I don't even know if we want to talk about this real quick. What was the Bull Moose Party?
They were always fighting the Russians, Boris and Natasha. You know, it was an anti-communist political party.
Bull Moose Party was when Theodore Roosevelt decided, because he gave up his nomination to Taft, and then decided, no, I'm going to run again, but the nomination he had, because he was a Republican, was already taken, so he's like, fine, I'll come up with my own party name, and I'm...
So the Bull Moose Party is basically like Teddy Roosevelt's version of the artist formerly known as Prince?
Pretty much.
He was trying to get out of his contract?
This is Teddy Roosevelt, like, poning Taft. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm speculation on my part, but I want to say that the reason he chose Bull Moose is because he likes to kill Bull Moose.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
possibly.
His thing was killing
someone. So his party is, I am here to kill you.
Yeah.
TR has, we can say a lot of stuff about him, but he actually was a foundational secularist in some significant ways. He was himself religious, but he basically thought that religion and government should remain separate. He was one of the people that basically got taken to task by the New York Times for saying, hey, we shouldn't have In God We Trust on our money. That was 1909. It was kind of a novel idea at the time.
So between you two, I think maybe atheism is the wrong stuff for me. We need to do a history show. Man, you guys got this stuff covered.
Just like TR and his, you know, big, you know, national forests and things
like that. Well, yeah, he also established all those fancy parks.
So that he could hunt bull moose.
He really liked killing things. Let's be clear on this. He really liked killing
things.
So
you have a strong opinion on hunting, it seems like.
or at least on Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Right.
But he was great in Night at the Museum.
So I look at my...
Oh, man. See, now you're going to make me feel bad about Robin Williams. Seriously.
Sorry.
So, since we're bringing death into the room.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
I'm just going to do it. Secular blogger... blah, 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 blah. What the hell is my deal? Secular blogger Anada Bijoy Das was killed in Bangladesh last week. Das was attacked by a group of masked men with machetes on his way to work and was killed instantly, according to local authorities. Das advocated for science and secularism on Mukto Mona, a site started by Avjit Roy, the American Bangladeshi blogger, who was killed in a similar fashion last month. Das is the third secular writer to be killed in Bangladesh this year. Third!
I think, actually, in the last 2 years, there have been 5 high-profile atheist bloggers that have been very publicly killed, murdered, assassinated, and in a very gruesome manner.
Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure Al-Qaeda is taking responsibility for them.
I don't know that Al-Qaeda is. I think it's people that say that this is against Islam and against the Prophet. And in a sort of substrate where that is honored, where that is saying, hey, this is your personal religious belief, maybe, yes, it should go through proper authorities. But that when you're sort of in that context, and that kind of sort of thought is honored, I don't know how you can then avoid that kind of mob sort of attack.
And it's a very local activity, right? It's not, going and hacking up a guy with a machete.
Yeah.
Or getting together with a couple of your friends and hacking up a guy with a machete it's not 9/11. It doesn't need like elaborate planning.
No. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's three guys in a Home Depot.
Yes. But that's what this is. I mean, yeah, Al-Qaeda is claiming credit for it, but I mean, Al-Qaeda is a group of people that's anybody could be Al-Qaeda at this point.
Well,
Al-Qaeda in Hoboken at this point.
there is a leader in
or AQIH.
Oh, we're horrible.
Okay, I'm just going to drop whatever line I was going down.
All right, fair enough. I'm laughing because I'm having fun with my friends, but this is ridiculous. This is, you know, this is hardly new.
You're laughing because it's
what else
so
am I
gonna traumatic.
Do?
There's exactly. No other. Yeah, I actually don't think that there's any other response. In fact, we were talking about this in the pre-show, and I immediately kind of glommed onto the Bangladesh aspect of it, and that there's been three there, and that, you know, what's going on in Bangladesh, you know, like this is yet another crazy thing happening in Bangladesh. So there's like typhoons and there's earthquakes and there's droughts and they're killing jillions of people. And then no one actually knows how many numbers of people are killed by everything that happens in Bangladesh every year.
But there's always a question, is this new? Well, I suppose it's new because there is an increase in people who are speaking out about not believing in a religion. I suppose that this makes this new, but I hardly think that this is something that is unique to this era. You know, it's like, is this a new thing that is happening, or is this something that's been going on the entire time, but we haven't been paying attention to it, or the news wasn't there, or...
I actually wonder if there might be, like, it's two things, there's two sides that are happening at the same time, in part because of modern sort of, because of modern media. So right. On the one hand, you have the ability of a blogger to reach a wide audience very, very quickly and very easily and do it directly without any kind of sponsorship. But on the other hand, you also have the ability of people who are violently opposed to apostasy and the denial of Muslim belief.
Right.
Having the ability to also get together on the internet in order to brew and concentrate their anger to the point where they feel like they can actually take action.
Right.
So both of those things are really only possible through the technology of the internet and the ability of the internet to allow people to connect without actually being physically in the same place. So it is possible that this is a new thing, but because the reason I'm saying it's a new thing is because it's not like Muslim states haven't been prosecuting violence against people who do not believe in core Muslim tenets and speak out about that.
It's in the
that's
book.
A common yeah. thing, right? Yeah. That's in the rule set. That's part of the
page 86.
Right. Yeah. It's in
Dianetics commercial.
Yeah, the first, even the first version of the Muslim D&D manual has that rule. So
there are a few religions that take root that don't have that rule in it somewhere. Right. I mean, even some of the vaguely hippie, don't hurt anybody, new agey things have something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And it just seems to be a part of it is take this thing that gives us control over you, make it part of your identity, let it control all aspects of your life, and kill anybody who tells you otherwise.
Right. And that's I think the only other thing that we should pay attention to is the fact that Islam isn't the only faith that actually does that kind of thing.
Right.
They're just the most, they're the one we pay the most attention to right now.
Right.
But they're also the youngest of the large global religions.
I also think an important aspect of this is understanding that the authorities in Bangladesh are allowing this to happen and really show no interest in putting a stop to it or investigating what happened or punishing anybody. And that just creates this overwhelming sense of like frustration and almost, you know, futility because, you know, if the people who are supposed to stop this from happening are going to stop it, what else can you do? Like, except run.
Right.
Now, something that really puts this, or puts the Norway story into perspective here is you have a government that is saying we are a secular government and we do value the ability to have free speech. In Bangladesh, it is ostensibly a secular government, but the government authorities have actually been arresting or punishing bloggers or other people for their speech that may be offensive to religious parties. And when you have anyone that could be offended by something and say, this offends my religion, the fact that you wear this thing, the fact that you say this thing, the fact that you publish this thing, anything offends my religious sensibilities, you could have people being arrested for anything. And this is ostensibly a secular government that isn't saying, as Norway recently has, that isn't saying we value your ability to do this and then likewise protect the people who do speak out in that way. And in terms of who is claiming responsibility? We have the wife right now of Avjit Roy, who was killed about 2 months ago, who is now in the United States. She was herself attacked in the same incident where her husband was murdered. And she's receiving medical treatment and care. And she's actually doing interviews and speaking with different organizations. And she says, OK, there's a local group that is, you know, there that has claimed responsibility. We have no reason to believe otherwise. But she said, at the bottom of it, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter which group is claiming responsibility. The fact that there aren't these protections for individuals and the fact that criticizing someone's religion can get you assassinated in a gruesome public right. manner and is the problem.
Ranjan said, you know, Islam, it's the youngest of the world religions, but it is not the sole, you know, it is not the sole purveyor of this kind of violence. But I do have to ask, are we seeing this kind of, I don't know if I'd call it widespread, but somewhat common and noticeable and loud and for the purposes of getting attention, killing people who disagree with them in this sort of manner, like going after Charlie Hebdo, going after bloggers, basically going after what counts as journalism in the 21st century. I mean, do we see Christians doing that in places where we have Christian sectarian violence?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, we do know that there's some of this stuff is happening. For example, Russian, the Russian rule laws and whatnot against gay marriage,
right.
And against even the existence or the behavior of gays authentically as gays, and similar laws that are being enacted in Uganda and other nations in Africa where Christian morality is being embedded into the legal framework and then being associated with death penalties, for example.
Right.
So we do have that.
You have Buddhist rule in Myanmar and sectarian violence against Muslims in Myanmar. Mm-hmm. You also have in
the Hindutva movement literally next door in India, which is essentially the same thing about Hinduism. And Hinduism is older than all the Judeo-Christian religions. So, yeah, I don't know that it's a unique aspect to Islam. I think we're paying attention to Islam mostly because Islam is a global religion that doesn't live in the under the umbrella of privilege that Christianity and Judaism to a certain extent do because of their age.
I think we also may be more paying attention to it because you have whole governments that will uphold these kinds of things and enact them, not just sort of pay lip service by saying we'll criminalize your speech in order to appease religious sensibilities, but who themselves as actors of the government in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia in places like that is worthy of criticism. And in a place where we can look at government rule from a secular perspective in the United States, looking at government setup, there's a lot to be paid attention to there.
My suspicion, and this is, you know, this is anecdotal, I'm not going to offer it as proof though, is that this type of violence, going against bloggers, going up against magazines, Charlie Hebdo, cartoonists, things like that, this appears to be, in this current moment, unique to fundamentalist Islam. It seems to be unique. Because I imagine here in the United States, especially here in the, you know, in our branch of the atheism movement and the humanism movement, if this kind of thing was happening with the same regularity in the defense of the Catholic Church or whatever screwy church that Mel Gibson belongs to, I think we would be hearing about it.
Yeah, we wouldn't be parking our cars outside.
Right. Yeah, essentially.
Right.
But we would hear about it and we would, you know, somebody would tell me. Because it's like, we get a lot of our news, so much of our news right now is being told to us by other, hey, you guys should do this news story. Hey, you guys should do that news story.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, this is not scientific. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. But I think if it were, we'd be hearing about it a bit more.
Well, it's
I'm not certain I buy the privilege thing with Islam and the world. Because once you own a country, I think you and I think that's sort of the entry point.
And you're reminding me of the argument that I made when we were talking about Charlie Hebdo, that institutional religions, by definition,
are
privileged. Yeah, right.
No, that's a fair point.
I would say,
I think the only piece that I would clarify there would be to say that Islam is where we have a problem with Islam is in two different places. One, when a country decides to run itself as an Islamic nation,
yeah,
and then decide to attach legal force to theology,
right?
And the other place where we have a problem with it, or we seem to be stumbling across problems, is when Islamic rules and Islamic law conflicts with existing law in nations that don't consider Islam to be part of their in part of their inherent fabric.
Right.
So that's things like France. That's things like in the United States where everybody's worried about Sharia law.
Right.
Which is, of course,
a
complete canard, and they are all making it up. And see,
but that's the problem. If you say like what I just said, where this kind of violence seems to be part and parcel fundamentalist Islam, it is really easy and understandable why somebody would lump me in with the folks in Louisiana who
are all happy about religious privilege laws until somebody suggests that the Muslims have the same law, and the people who say that, you know, Obama is a secret Muslim and he's bringing Sharia law to the United States. I could see why I would be lumped in like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just sometimes I would like to know, I know what I have to do, and I know, I can't pretend that Islam is special in this way. I've read too much history to be able to say that with a straight face, but I'd like to know what the facts on the ground are right now.
Do you know where freedom of speech is completely legal and guaranteed by a charter of fundamental rights and basic freedoms?
Where's that?
The Czech Republic.
Hey, the Czech Republic.
Yes.
Ding, also, ding, ding, according ding. To a 2001 census, 59% of Czechs are agnostic, atheist, or non-believers.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Any other facts?
They have many castles.
Castles are nice.
They have the highest density of castles of any nation in the world.
Over 2,000 castles.
Over 2,000 castles.
And I think more importantly, and Sam, very prescient to your interests, they are the biggest consumers of beer in the world.
They're not the biggest. We're the biggest.
Oh, right.
They consume the most beer. They're the beeriest. But we're the biggest.
One is in terms of race. The other is in terms of mass.
Or volume.
Or volume, yes. Yeah. Well, but people after mine own heart. I'll go that far. I actually have always wanted... I've always wanted to go to Prague.
Prague is a lovely city.
Yeah,
it really is.
I've never been out of the country because I'm deathly terrified I'm going to do something horrible and be that American guy.
He's going to blaspheme. You can do that in Czech Republic.
I'm not worried that I'm going to blaspheme. I'm going to worry that I go into a bar, because bars have very specific rules. I mean, even here.
You're worried that you're going to go into some place and you're going to order something that you think you're saying authentically, and you're saying you think you're ordering a beer.
No, I protect myself against that by not trying to pronounce anything ever.
Oh, okay. Because there's always the worry that, like, you say something and you think you're saying, I would like an X, and you're saying, actually, I would like sex with ostriches.
No, that'd be funny.
Yes.
Well, I'm more afraid that I would say that and then they would take me seriously and then I'd spend a night in jail.
Or with
an ostrich.
But yeah. In the Czech Republic, you could about that, because it was voted the in the top 10 best countries for freedom of press, and censorship is not permitted in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, you learn something every day.
So censorship not being permitted, is that, so how much of that is I wonder, the result of Václav Havel being the first president of the Czech Republic?
I think that actually that's a good point.
Just like the first president of the Czech Republic, when the Czech Republic broke off from Slovakia and Slovenia, was Václav Havel, who's a playwright. He was in jail in Czechoslovakia, and then when they had the Velvet Revolution, the first president was this playwright. So it makes sense that they would have such strong protections for free speech.
Yeah.
The original Budweiser is Czech, isn't it? Like, the original?
Yes, and actually, I think it was. And actually, in around 2012, there was a beer blasphemy scandal that happened. Ooh. Because the new sort of economy and things like that were happening, I guess. And beers started serving bars started serving mixed beer drinks, so like beer and soft drinks, like a Pilsner and a Sprite thing.
Rodlers and things like that.
Exactly. Okay, exactly. Right. And so there was a slight scandal. That's the biggest thing that comes up when you search for Czech blasphemy, is beer blasphemy.
Well, also in 1980, okay, some Czech astronomers
I think the I love Czech
No, you're gonna like this. You're gonna like this. Where were they? 1980, some astronomers actually discovered a asteroid and named it 3834 Zappa Frank.
Nice, nice.
I think you like that one, Sam.
I like that one. I like that one.
Well, the reason I knew about the Budweiser thing, there was this bar I used to go to, and they had a sign for the original, you know, the Czech version of Budweiser. And, you know, here in America, we're used to seeing, like, companies that, like, since 1975, because they've been around for so long.
Yeah.
And the sign literally said, Budweiser since 1211.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Is that a typo?
Okay,
no.
I'm out.
Yeah.
Wash my hands.
You win.
You win.
So we should probably zoom out from the blogging thing and perhaps take it a little bit more general. This comes to us from William from Chandler, Arizona, who writes, how many Christians take advantage of the opportunity to do bad things because they will be forgiven as long as they acknowledge Jesus as God before they die? This is sort of the inversion of you don't believe in a God, so nobody's watching you, therefore you can do evil.
Yeah, it's...
This is how many people don't do evil because they think a God's watching them.
No,
this is how many people do evil
because they know they can be forgiven.
Ah.
Yeah, because it's that whole state of grace thing. You know, you spend spend your entire life punching babies in the head, and then in the last 10 minutes of your life say, oh, I'm sorry, God, I believe in Jesus, and then you slide in on a technicality.
I guess so. Well, you're asking four people who don't, so...
But my point is, my point on this one is, though, we on one side you have people say, well, I'm forgiven, I have this, I have Sky Daddy who will forgive me, therefore it's okay if I do this horrible selfish thing because I will be forgiven. On the other side, you've got people who don't have, well, I got nobody watching me, so it's okay if I do this terrible thing. Maybe we should stop looking at religion as to whether or not it's absolutely the source of where bad things come from, either from its position or from its lack, and just say people do crummy things all the time.
See, and that's the tack I would actually take. I mean, I feel like the answer to that question is no more than usual.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I think there's different ways. There's different atheisms, if you will, right? There are people who are genuinely anti-theist and think that religion is actually ruining things and making people worse.
Yeah.
I get that. I'm not that. I feel that religion is just not a factor in people's behavior.
Right.
People act the way they act. They either cover it in religion or they don't cover it in religion, but ultimately they're doing what they feel they want to do.
Right.
And it seemed like a right idea at the time. That's how people are generally acting.
I would challenge that because going back to the Islam, particularly like when you have governments that are running on the laws that you get from Islam, I don't think someone would come up with the idea of, say, FGM without a religion telling them that that's right.
Well, yes, they do, because FGM actually isn't
an predated
Islamic. Yeah,
Islam.
It's not an Islamic activity. It's actually...
In those particular areas, well, the world of Northern Africa, where that is a cultural practice.
It is then further entrenched and supported by Islam.
Right.
But it is a religiously based practice. It goes predates Islam, but it takes religious thinking to think that's a good idea.
I think the fact that it predated religion means that there was some justification in some good idea prior. I think that there is pretty good evidence that a religion that separates women as having less status and prestige would then further entrench the idea that that's okay. So I can see why both would lead to that. But in terms of either of those, I don't know.
I think religion can be a source of violence. I think religion can be a source of bad ideas. I think religion definitely entrenches bad ideas and allows them to stick around for far longer than they might otherwise do.
I actually agree with the second part of that more than the first. I think most of the bad ideas that are in religion are kind of already there, and they're just sort of institutionalized in religious doctrine or whatever.
I find
it makes bad ideas harder to fix.
Yeah, and what I find religion doing more often than not is, like, people say, well, why don't you just go along with religion? It's the polite thing to do, da 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 da. I think that's bull all the way through. What I'm finding religion doing more often than not, even among people who are not devout or fundamental or horrible, is they use religion as a way to avoid being polite. They can invoke some higher power and say, well, I don't have to be polite to you because these rule sets that you're breaking, because they're my rule sets. And then you have these bad ideas which you keep going, and maybe there's some reason you want to keep them, and then because your religion says it's okay, you can keep it going. It's a shroud. It's not just, I've always said that religion is the armor that dogma wears, but it's also a tarp. Mm-hmm. It hides so much crap under it that it makes it hard to talk about it politely, it makes it hard to talk about it honestly, and it makes it really hard to shine a light on it.
And it makes people emotional about things that don't necessarily have to be emotional.
Right.
It's armor in some ways, but it also means that the people who are using it are actually thinner skinned than normal. They start out at a level of offense that's non-zero.
Whence my anti-theism.
Do you know what helps people see things clearly when it is shrouded by tarps of religion?
What's that?
Contact lenses. Soft contact lenses were invented by a Czech national in 1959.
Wow, out of nowhere!
Also,
goes the dynamite.
It is a legal requirement in the Czech Republic to drive with your headlights on to ensure that all motorists are adequately visible.
Sigmund Freud discovered his penis in Czech Republic. He was three. He lived there from 0 to 3. Just saying.
No, we're saying nice things about the Czech Republic, Rajan.
Gregor Mendel, all of genetics, pea plants, yay!
Students at a... Yeah, going into it. Students at a New York Catholic college have started a petition to stop Cardinal Timothy Dolan from delivering a commencement address. Students at Lemoyne College in Syracuse have collected almost 700 signatures in opposition to Dolan's appearance. Dolan has been accused of hiding diocese money to protect priests accused of sexual abuse. School officials have made it clear that they have no intention of changing the commencement speaker. Becky, this was one that, well, one, this is education, and this is right in your wheelhouse, but you were pretty ticked at this one. Well,
yeah.
Not ticked at the church, not the students, of course.
Yeah, so you're going to shift your money around so that you won't have to pay out to victims who were victimized by your priests under your care, under your watch, and then you're going to, you know, punish students that say, hey, we don't want this guy representing our school or coming to our school. I mean, look, there's a lot to be said for speakers who come and give commencement speeches. My own alma mater had a lot of people that in prior years of my graduation, we had Madeleine Albright come, and some people said, no, Madeleine Albright can't do this because she was in charge when this horrible thing happened. You're right. Going to have that with any particular commencement speaker that's worth anything, right? And the idea is, do you want them to come and speak and then be able to have people in the audience turn their backs on them during the commencement speech? I don't know. I think that might be a better thing. I think it might be a show of force to say, we want a petition to say we don't like this guy and we don't want him coming to speak at our graduation, but then also having the guy come to their graduation and then being able to say, you know, as a student there, this is someone who does not represent me, and have that person, have that commencement speaker, have that be your welcome.
Is Madeleine Albright, who, you know, was a politician in the United States, power projection, imperialism, whatever, the same, is that the same moral, is there moral equivalence to, oh yeah, here's this cardinal dude. Oh yeah, well, what's he known for? Hiding money from the victims of child rapists in his church?
I think to some people, the victims of the war or the victims of military actions, that may be on a higher moral scale for some individuals. We look at Brandeis University that rejected Ayaan Hirsi Ali's coming to speak because of some statements that she made. And we say, hey,
are you making a moral equivalence there?
I'm not. I'm saying that in the minds of some people, we have things that are very, very near and dear to us. And to say whether this is more or less moral than one other person's, you know, personal cause.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would just rather have them come and say, and then for the student body and the faculty to say, we don't want them to get an honorary degree and we don't like them, but here, come talk to us anyway. And then let me tear down whatever platitudes you give our graduates.
But it's not, this is the one thing that makes me challenge that. Cause I like that. The idea is, no, you can come, you can talk, but you're not going to be unchallenged. I like that. But this is a commencement address. This is the apex of somebody's educational career. And at that apex, you've got somebody whose biggest claim to fame is a connection to child rapists there to basically rain on it. It's one thing if they're just there to talk. It's another thing if they're there to send you off onto your, you know, and read all the places you'll go or whatever the heck they do at.
Yeah, but then we're basically forcing everyone to put up with just completely. I mean, just we're saying that the bar for being a qualified public commencement address speaker is so high that the only people who are gonna be able to do it are people who have nothing to say or have no actual qualifications to say anything. We might as well just listen to the Valkyrie.
Where's the bar where you're allowed to say no, not this guy?
So I have a different take on this, but it's not. I think they should come. I think you should be able to make a decision as a student whether or not the school is paying them. Like, you should literally make a public, and like, I would love to see the university simply say, "Yeah, Cardinal Dolan, we love you. We want you to be here. We embrace free speech as an institution of higher learning, and we believe that your voice is one of many voices that need to be heard. Be aware of the fact that based on decisions that we've decided to make about whether we like you or don't like you, we're decided not to pay you. The invitation is still open, and your name is still on the invite. Feel free to not come, you jackass." I'd be perfectly fine with that.
Does the university actually, as a Jesuit college, receive any support from the diocese? Is there a conflict of interest there?
There might be, but they are also probably paying him specifically for that address.
And this is the time where Dave and I have a meaningful look at each other going, yeah, we've only been at these things as audience.
Yeah
this is outside of our world. Anyway.
Do you remember your commencement speaker, Ron John?
No.
Because I don't remember the content of any send-off speech.
Yeah, see, my preference is just to get rid of the damn thing.
The whole thing of what it means to be a graduate is that you have had your own accomplishments. I don't need the accomplishments or the controversy of someone else.
But
justifying and blessing my, essentially blessing my graduation.
I found a button, I found a thing that bothers me, and I'm going to keep doing a thing at it. Wow, that there's no way I could.
Do the thing at the thing.
Yeah. Phrasing.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep talking about this one. Would you remember your commencement speaker if it was somebody? If it were this?
If it was Ion Hersey Ali.
Well, if it were Ion Hersey Ali, yeah. But would you remember this person? Would you remember your commencement speaker if it was this caliber of person?
I think I would remember the speaker who was controversial because it would either motivate me to work within a particular direction. I think that a controversial speaker would prove to be more memorable than someone who is so angelic without any past actions to criticize that nothing could be said.
I think you're blending the edges.
At least I didn't graduate from a college of mines somewhere that invited a 6,000-year-old creationist, you know, Earth is 6,000-year-old.
Yeah.
Creationist to come be my commencement speaker. That happened up in Montana,
yeah,
I believe.
But I'm thinking about these people. My own personal opinion on this is I would love to have this guy show up at my graduation so that I could
moon him or something.
Yeah, moon him or get arrested. Or Ken Ham would be great, and I wouldn't do anything. I would love to talk to Ken Ham. I'd be really nice to Ken Ham because, wow,
how do you do it?
Yeah,
what? Stupid.
How do you not walk into a door every day of your life?
Oh my God! You're here in real life and wearing pants. How does that even happen?
On your legs. Do you have someone to help you with that, or do you have people
in the Czech Republic don't need help putting on pants because they're awesome and brilliant. They actually have very high literacy rates and levels of education.
That's true.
My thought, I had an entirely different sort of thought when I read the story than you guys are. This entire conversation, I really had nothing to add to it because it's like that's not all where I went.
Yeah.
My thought was there is clearly a large group, I would say a majority of Catholics, who are so far better people than the Catholic hierarchy.
Yeah.
There is a college,
even among the cardinals.
Even among the cardinals.
Not like there's a dearth of them.
And the problem is that the Catholic hierarchy is set up in a way that 95% of Catholics will take birth control because not taking birth control because God said so is a really stupid idea.
Right.
But you still can't change that because the three guys at the top are never going to change their mind.
Right.
And that's what I see in the story is that there is this mass support of students who say, no, it is unacceptable that somebody who protects child rapists come to talk at my graduation. And the hierarchy of the school is like, yeah, too bad.
Yeah. But that's what the Catholic, this is their strategy. This is our schools. You don't have a voice. But you just pay us.
But there's been a couple of these. Like Benjamin Netanyahu came to a university, I think, last year. The first one, actually, that really got a huge amount of attention was when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, who was a Holocaust denier, came to Columbia University.
Yeah.
And the president of Columbia University Columbia University en masse was just like, this is a horrible idea. We don't want him to come here. We completely refused to come. And the president of Columbia University said, no, he's coming. He's coming because he's crazy, but he runs a thing. You live in a world where this guy runs a thing.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be graduates of Columbia University, you're going to be exposed to a world that actually exists.
I think that's Monday morning quarterbacking, really.
But that
I do.
Well, and also I think it's a huge difference between inviting somebody to speak at a college and inviting somebody to speak at a commencement, like you were saying, Sam.
Yeah.
Like,
my real question remains is where are people allowed to say no?
Well, I think there's a part of me that wants to make some elaborate argument about postmodernism and structural decline.
Yeah.
And just say like, okay, well, the left is essentially a fragmented thing. So there's always going to be somebody who's going to say no to things, and you're going to have to decide some people's no's are more important than other people's no's. And it's not going to be about numbers, particularly when you move upwards in the income chain.
Yeah.
So there's just no way to find somebody who everybody's going to be happy with, and there's no way to weight one person's no over everyone else's
yes. That just seems like such a weak argument in, so, you know, somebody who runs a country, that makes sense. This is the world you live in. But I just, yeah, what's this guy? He helps child rapists. That's why he's here. Hey. It seems like he's here.
And there's very few ways I'm going to defend the story, but that's one.
Yeah. He's here because he's a technical authority on the process.
But what else is he known for at this point? But being a cardinal. I mean, okay, yeah, that's an important position in the church.
Just because the Cubs wouldn't sign him to settle down.
Is this university within the top 2% of universities worldwide?
I don't know why.
Because Charles University in Prague certainly is. Charles University in Prague is the oldest continually operating university in Europe. It was founded, believe it or not, hey, this is like the Pilsner thing, only like 150 years later. It was in 1347.
Nice.
This is a freaking old university.
Okay, I want to keep...
I think their crest actually says, this is a freaking old university, only in Czech, which is a made-up language.
Actually, Charles University is number one in the world for linguistics.
We were doing so well!
They have a very good world-renowned...
Call now and respond to Ron John's challenge.
Geography and linguistics department. So it may say this is a freaking old university on the seal. I don't know because it's written with Czech and Cyrillic letters.
All right.
It's in Latin.
There just seems to be the hint of an argument here. To go back to what we were talking about before, and I'd like you to address this just so that I can kill this beast in my head. That you know, people are complex. People are relative. Morality can be context sensitive. So don't complain.
It's not don't complain. It's don't expect that just because you have an opinion that everyone is going to bend and move and silence themselves.
Oh, that's fine.
See,
yeah,
that's okay with that. I believe there is a difference between saying that you want to participate in an argument and saying you don't want the argument to happen.
Right.
Or that you don't want the dialogue to happen. There's a difference between guiding the conversation and eliminating a voice from it. And
is this guy in any danger of having his voice eliminated? He's a prince of the church.
That is a fair point. It's not like, yes, Cardinal Timothy Dolan is, in addition to being so dreamy, Dolan. sorry, that's been like brewing in my head for like 5 minutes.
No, with you, yeah.
Right. But yeah, you're right. Cardinal Dolan is not lacking in opportunities to be heard. That is a fair point. I don't know. I really balk at any decision to eliminate speech from a conversation. Shut up is an incredibly, it's like perhaps one of the rudest things you can say.
In this day and age, with this access to information and this access to a voice and with this power dynamic, please go away, or not even please, go away now. Go talk somewhere else. I think is okay. I don't think it's the same argument.
I think you have to say then that everything that Timothy Dolan has ever said, that like there is absolutely no possibility that Timothy Dolan is going to say anything of any value at a commencement address. And
why does that matter?
Because that's what he's been hired to do. That's the job. I don't buy that he's going to be useless. I don't think he's going to do anything or say anything that is going to be so horrible that it's going to ruin anyone's graduation.
Can't go with it.
Okay.
Just can't.
You're arguing for a personal response to Catholicism on the part of one or more students at the university that...
They could get another cardinal. It's this particular person is what it is. Is the argument... Where's the news story? Is the problem is it's this particular cardinal with this particular past.
Well, this one has shifted around money to protect their assets from being.
And I know
out.
You
the
could
other
say
ones
that for...
have shifted around actual molesters. So,
right. But there's other people who have done other things. I understand that. I do. But
why don't you get one of those like
I'm finding it
really nice nuns who want to like go around and help things that have been criticized by the guy from up here? You know,
right. That's a possibility.
Get one of the upstart nuns. Seriously.
Upstart nuns. That'd be a great band name.
Or an A&E reality series. They all sit at a table. Yes. I'm in. I like your charity idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying, I guess to wrap up, and I need to wrap up, I get the argument that killing speech is bad. I do get that. But I don't think this is killing speech. I don't think it reaches that. That's a very high mark you have to hit. And I do think people have the right to say no, and clearly this school has the right to say no back.
Yeah.
So, all right. None of this will be advised.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity for a two-way conversation there, and that two-way conversation would be that'd be part of what you'd be denying.
With who?
With Archbishop Timothy Dolan. Like, you actually have the ability to sway him in some way, speak back.
I think he would... when you have that kind of... This is a new argument.
Yes.
And when you have that kind of power, you have to come to the table saying that you're willing to listen. Because you're in the hierarchy, and the top of that hierarchy is somebody whose word is literally the law of the universe. Or at least that's what you think.
Fair point.
And if you're going to come to that table and if that dialogue is going to happen, you kind of have to lay some ground rules. And this is not the way you lay those ground rules.
I guess. I still feel like inviting Ahmadinejad and having him speak at Columbia was the right thing to do.
And having Ayaan Hirsi Ali not
come to Brandeis was the wrong thing.
I do not think these things are fully equivalent. I think you're making a false equivalency here.
Is it because of his role as opposed to his voice?
Mainly, I think it's because this is entirely an inside affair.
Okay.
It's a Catholic school. It's the Catholic Church. He's a Catholic cardinal.
They're not bringing him in to expose the students to new ideas.
Right. Okay. So it's not Timothy Dolan coming to Brandeis.
Yeah.
It's Timothy Dolan coming to...
And also, it's the graduation. If you're bringing Timothy Dolan to talk and, you know, in a place where students don't necessarily have to be or can... maybe even have to be, but are being exposed to ideas in the process of their education, that's one thing. But to cap your education with a guy who protects child rapists, that's an entirely different thing.
I may have to separate this out and do it as its own podcast.
Yeah, well, because there is an ongoing, there's a bunch of people who have been talking about like left-based censorship.
Right.
And it's a fairly large...
Yeah, but that is such bull. So much of it is. Because it's not, you're not allowed to talk a lot of the times.
Right.
This is the thing, is when, as someone who's perceived on the left, when I talk about censorship, I'm talking about the government coming in and saying, you can't speak.
Right.
That's different from saying, you can't speak at my house. You can't speak at my dinner table.
You can't speak on my dime.
You can't speak on my dime.
Right.
Or on my property.
Mm-hmm.
And these things are not equivalent.
Right. No, that part I totally get. There's a mandate around being an educational institution and therefore being open to more voices than the average bear. And there's also that's entirely it. Honestly,
yeah,
that's
Catholic cardinal, Catholic school,
right. So this is not an exposure. This is not diversity.
Right.
Yeah. This is actually the lack of diversity.
There's no clear educational point here that they wouldn't get that they haven't already gotten out of 4 years of being at a Catholic
school. Diversity would be Neil deGrasse Tyson. Or Bill Nye.
Or
Ayaan Hirsi Ali.
Or Tim Minchin.
Or the guy who runs Oman. I don't know.
Which, by the way, Tim Minchin did an actual address, and if you can find it on YouTube, holy.
It's pretty good.
That is awesome. One of the only memorable actual addresses with good messages that I can think of.
All right, Becky. So have we
exhausted our praises of the Czech Republic? No, because no one can possibly exhaust praising the Czech Republic.
I was going to say, have we put this one to bed for you? Are you comfortable with yourself again?
What matters most is whether the Czech people are comfortable with me at this point. Thank you. If we have a chance to break bread and salt our bread with the Czech people, I welcome the opportunity to share in that cultural exchange.
And Becky's always been comfortable with herself. She went to Smith.
I'll just leave that there. Thank you, Becky.
You can see the Eiffel Tower from Prague with the checkmate soft contact.
Yeah, you see, I was trying to turn this into a thing where it's like, okay, we're kind of bagging on Becky for the whole hour. And I wanted to kind of turn it around and say, thank you, Becky, for everything that you do. I love you, et cetera, et cetera.
That and become bag worthy.
Really not going there.
I can't win.
And you're doing it with such amazing background music. That's the thing. Like, this is, yeah.
I can't win. Goodbye, everybody.
Did I make things hard for you?
Everybody makes things hard.
Sorry, I'm sweat and smell.
You're against me. She's against me. They're all against me.